So hello everybody and welcome. It is I, the realist philosopher. So how y'all doing today? Hope you're all doing good, fine, and well. I am here today with the founder of MGTOW TV. I think his name is pronounced Amir Metwaly. I'm sorry if I butchered that because is that right or is that close or am I way off?
It's like Amaral without the all. So if you can say Amaral, get rid of the all and you got it. And you got it.
Amr.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Okay. So how you doing today, Amr?
I am doing very well. How about yourself, sir?
I'm having a rough time, man. I've been out of the hospital about 3 weeks. Just recently started trying to exercise to get back into shape and of course pushed myself a little too hard, a little too ambitious, so I'm suffering today. I was suffering yesterday more. Today's pretty bad too. But I feel okay. I'm pumped full energy drinks. I think they're what's it called? A Monster energy drink. So a lot of well, hopefully a lot of energy. I'm gonna need it. But I feel like one would expect from somebody who's recently recovering from sepsis and a heart attack. So how about yourself?
I am doing well. I'm very interested to hear your story. I mean, if you don't mind telling me, what got you into this whole situation? I heard you were biking and then you fell on something.
So, it's a long story. I'll try to shorten it, but it's entertaining, and I can always make a story entertaining, even if it's about melting ice. So, I'm an older guy. I'm in my mid-50s. I'm getting up there. And my contract for my recent job, that was actually a holdover from my time in China, where I had a distribution company, was coming to an end. And, as you know, a guy in his 50s, somebody my age, finding work is not easy. So, scoured the internet, looked for work in my field in the city I was living in, Phoenix, Arizona. I couldn't find any. Big cities, lots more competition. The labor force is actually, there's a glut of people to do jobs. There's not a shortage. So, I started applying for jobs nationwide, not just in Arizona. Eventually, I did find something. It was in Montana. Which is the ass end of nowhere. It's one of the least populated states in America. And I said, great. Sounds good. Looks good. I like that. I'm tired of the big city. So I got the work. I arranged all of my necessary tasks to exit Arizona, canceling all your utilities and such. And then I made the trip. I arrived a little early to do all the necessary planning. And I wasn't on a bike. I went out for a walk, just to explore around the neighborhood. And I'm just walking, walking, walking. And I come upon a stretch of where there's no sidewalk. And it's like, okay. So I'm walking across it. It looks fine, looks fine. And I stepped on an area that looked just fine. But somehow the hole had been covered and then some silt had built up from runoff and leaves. I don't know. You couldn't see the hole. I stepped in this hole. I sunk down to like almost my knee, and there was a metal spike there. And I'm lucky it didn't break my ankle, actually. But if I would have broke my ankle, that would have been better. And the spike went into my leg. It didn't look particularly bad, but 3 weeks later, I was at work. And then I just collapsed, went into shock. I was having, it was 80 degrees and I was freezing, and ended up in hospital for about a month. And they had to hook up what I call a sucker bag to my leg to suck out all the pus and the blood clots, one of which had caused a mild heart attack. I didn't even realize I'd had, or realize was a heart attack. Something didn't feel right, but I didn't know until later. And here I am now, a few weeks out of hospital, feeling crappy, feeling horrible in a new state, having moved. And if anybody knows anything about the logistics of moving, it's expensive. Without unforeseen hospital stays that you can't cover because I let my insurance lapse from my prior position, so everything was out of pocket. So I'm broke mofo, and here. And about to be moving into my car to live in my car because I'm broke. So that's where I am, baby.
So question, how come you didn't sue the city or the county? I'd have done exactly that if I was in your position.
Something to think about. It's maybe a little too soon for that. I just got out of the hospital. That's a thought. Something to think about, for sure. I've just become ambulatory now, honestly. It's only been about a week and a half that I've been able to walk reliably. So, I'm just now getting back on my feet. And literally, I've spent almost all of my time here just in bed, doing nothing because I'm too exhausted to do anything. It's been that bad. If anybody out there knows anything about sepsis, septic shock, coronaries, you combine them, you're lucky to be alive. So, yeah.
Yeah, from my understanding, you're very athletic. You're into fencing, so that probably saved your life, all that athletic work, I guess.
Yeah, 40-plus years I've been doing the same thing every day. I don't know how many minutes of cardio I get a week. It's got to be over 400. I mean, so yeah, I get a lot of cardio. That's probably something that played a big part in me not dying, the fact that I've been a lifelong athlete. Tried exercising. I've been exercising now, I think, 11 days, 3-1-3-1, so 3 days on and 1 day off, trying to get back to some semblance of shape. Yesterday, I tried exercising what would be my normal amount before the injury, and I just nearly killed myself. It was like my heart was pounding the whole day. My chest was hurting. My head was hurting. My whole body was tingling. My extremities were tingling. I couldn't sleep. It's like, oh, that was too much. Okay. So I know I need to pack it off by about half. but I'm still alive. So, yeah.
So what is septic shock? Because I never heard of it. I'm sure a lot of people out there don't know what septic shock is.
So it's caused by an infection that essentially spreads and it affects your whole system. So generally speaking, infections are limited to wherever your injury was, but if they're left too long, they'll infect your entire body. And then what happens is your body kind of, the best way I can explain it, overreacts, and it just goes into overdrive insofar as inflammation and fighting the infection, but in doing so, it also damages your body as well as the infection. And so your own body just goes nuts to fight the infection and kind of overreacts, and it doesn't just kill the infection. It also can, well, kill you if you're not careful. And in pretty decent condition. And even if you do survive, it could do permanent damage. And the only way to know is, long-term monitoring and see how well you recover. And hopefully my constitution is such from years of exercise and being mindful of my fitness that I'll recover fully. Only time will tell.
Which brings us to this question. What did the doctor say? Like, what's your status right now? I mean, are you, like, in the clear, making progress, or...
So the last time I went in for a follow-up, he said I should really be doing as little as possible. Nothing would be ideal. What's the ideal, though? In this day and age, we can very rarely... adhere to an ideal. So I don't really have a lot of choice insofar as being able to sit around and do nothing, especially going into the car life thing. So I'm going to have to do some kind of gig work. Like I already signed up for Walmart Spark, and I already have a Veo. That's like a medical transportation membership thing. The only good thing is that my expenses are extremely low, like $600 a month. So you can make that doing just 2-3 hours of work a day, not even 7 days a week, 5 days a week. Hell, you could do that in, 3 or 4 days and do very little, but I can't do nothing. So he said, ideally, hospice, as in stay with a family member. I told him, well, I have no family. They're all dead, except for a brother I can't stand. And he can't stand me either, and I ain't seen him in 20 years, so that's out. And he said, okay, well, then the next thing is if you're going to be doing anything, it can't be like manual labor. Like any work you do, you got to be off your feet. You got to give your heart a chance to recover and your body a chance to heal. So minimal amount of activity, with the ideal being nothing. Of course, that's not an option. So he said for the coronary, minor heart attack, it looks like. So 2 to 3 months. The sepsis, more serious. You'll just have to see how you feel. You have survived, so you're going to feel better as time passes. Whether or not I feel as good or have the energy I did before the injury and hospitalization is anyone's guess. So I'm in pretty bad shape right now, but it could be worse because, I'm talking to you, so I could be dead. So yeah, could always be worse.
And your GoFundMe is actually doing quite well. I checked it last night. I think you're over 1,000 by now, right?
It seems that there's still people out there who know who I am, even when the last time it was on YouTube, in any effective way, where YouTube wasn't shadow banning the hell out of me, was 2017. So apparently, I affected the lives of a lot of people, and they still know who I am, and there's still some people that actually follow me, which is good, even though YouTube shadow banned the hell out of all of my videos asking for people to make donations if they could. I don't know why that is. I think they just have a general blanket ban to suppress any content that I make, because most content producers on YouTube, they talk about the symptoms of the problem and not the problem itself, while I actually go deeper and I talk about what is the cause, not the symptoms. So they don't like people like me. So they really, really shadow ban the hell out of me. So I get more views on BitChute, which is insane. What, that's like 1% of YouTube's size. That's how you know that YouTube is shadow banning the hell out of you. You get more views on BitChute than you do on YouTube. That's not even possible unless they are consciously and willfully shadow banning you into oblivion, which tells me and a lot of other people, I think, that I'm speaking truth. Otherwise, why would they be shadow banning the hell out of me? But yeah, I got some donations also on your platform, MGTOW TV. I got a few people that donated via Cash App. It wasn't nearly enough insofar as what I need, but it'll suffice for the immediate present. So I really appreciate anybody out there that did donate. I made a video to thanking every buddy. And if anybody out there wants to make a donation, there'll be a link in the description. Any help is appreciated. I also have a Patreon, and I'm going to be trying to make daily pieces on that. And I want that to become the main way for people to support my work. Not just the GoFundMe. That's for the immediate aid I need for the medical bills, and so I, can actually survive and get through this first couple of months. But the best way to support me is via Patreon, so you get value for value. Because I'm going to try and put my best content there, my most philosophical content, and produce a single Patreon-only piece Monday to Friday, and that way you're getting something for your support. It's not just a straight up, I'm giving and getting nothing in return. So I'd like that to become a way for people to support my work more. And I'm also going to continue making content while I'm living in my car, which isn't ideal. It's not ideal, but I've done a lot of research, and it's actually cost quite a bit of money to buy all of the kit that I'm going to need. Who would have thunk that it's so expensive to live in your vehicle?
Well, no, I lived in a car for 5 years. Honestly, I never bought anything for that car. Have you experienced living in a car before?
No, but there were some things that I was going to need, like obviously, like a memory foam. Like I got a memory foam mattress that folds up so that it is more like so you can compress it, you fold it up, you take it out. Power supply. It's called the one I got is a Jackery 300. It'll power up to a 300-watt device, and it's like a portable power supply. So it's a big giant battery with an inverter that allows you to plug in devices and also to charge other smaller devices. So that's kind of a necessity. And then I got a stove and a cooler. I'm kind of set up a little differently because I'm not going to be doing the car life in the traditional way that most people do on YouTube. There's a lot of videos on YouTube, by the way, where people are living in their vehicles and traveling around the country. But I'm going to be staying in one specific location in Montana. I have a storage unit that's going to be like my home base, so I don't have to keep everything in my car. So I can utilize my car for more things, and which will enable me to be able to do more to make more money and use my car to kind of bring in income that I'm gonna need, because I really can't do a lot. I can drive. That's pretty easy. You just sit there. So not really too taxing on the body. And so because I've got the storage unit and I'm not traveling, and I don't, so I, that means I don't have to have all of my possessions in my vehicle, and so it makes it a lot easier in that sense. So I do have a plan, and yeah, I got the Planet Fitness membership. I'm gonna get that. I'm gonna do that tomorrow. I've got the laptop, so I can continue to make content on a daily basis. I didn't get the right phone plan though. This is all very new to me. It turns out there's a phone service called Visible, and it's kind of new, and it uses the Verizon network, and it offers, and it's better than Starlink. Actually, or wherein that it provides actual unlimited hotspot Wi-Fi, and it doesn't throttle you once you reach a certain cap. And I just found out about it after I had already purchased another plan that does have a cap. So I'm gonna, that's something I have to rectify so that I will have, and the Verizon network is everywhere, so unlimited upload, download, no caps. No throttling for $45 a month. That's pretty good.
Yeah, because I have T-Mobile. They throttle you after 50 gigabytes.
Yeah, you should check out. It's called Visible, and it utilizes the Verizon network, which is like you're covered 99.9% anywhere you go, and that's what I'm gonna get. But right now I've got something from Straight Talk, so it's a learning experience, but. I watched a lot of videos on YouTube of people who do this. I talked to a lot of people on Reddit in some of these urban car living forums. And so I pretty much have everything I need to be relatively comfortable. So we'll see. As long as I don't die, I could be okay, at least in the short term.
Yeah, living in a car is not that difficult at all. I mean, you can park in probably Walmart or someplace like that. Usually, when I park, I'm by 6, 7 in the morning, before anybody shows up to work or anything. Usually, I'm gone by 6, 7 in the morning. Like a Walmart super center, like nobody cares, man.
I already have. Yeah, I did all the research on that. I know all the places to park. Like hospital emergency room parking lots, and those are really good places. Walmart parking lots. The good thing about where I am, it's a tourist spot, and they all the Walmarts here allow RV and van. They allow people to park overnight, so I can have a set rotation of places where I'll just be there maybe one night a week, and then I can just rotate from place to place to place, and through trial and error, I'll know the ones that are the most reliable and where you get hassled the least. But the Walmarts are completely safe. They allow you to, in this area, park there overnight. But there's just not that many of them. There's a few, so I can't rely on them alone. So the other nights I'll park somewhere else. And again, there'll be some trial and error involved there. But I do have a plan, and also with unlimited internet access. I won't lack for things to keep my mind occupied, and I'll be able to devote a lot more time to my content creation, which is what I would really like to be able to focus on long term.
Now, you said, I believe you said it in one of your videos, that you might work for the TSA.
I was looking into that, but just recently, just trying to exercise, it was like I can't even. It's not even gonna. That's not gonna happen. The job is too physically demanding. It would kill me. I mean, I can't even. It was wishful thinking on my part. I'm a very how should I put this? Stubborn individual and overly stoic. I think a lot of people mistake Stoic philosophy and how to apply it to their lives. They don't tend to introduce a level of moderation and that you can take it too far. And I tend to do so and push myself well beyond my limits and what my body is telling me I should or should not be doing. And so I was very overly enthusiastic right when I got out of the hospital in speaking to someone who contacted me from the TSA. And I was like, oh, yeah, sure, that sounds good. And at that point, I hadn't even tried to exercise. I just got out of the hospital. I figured, oh, well, I'm free and clear now. I didn't even know I'd had a coronary. It was only later when I went back to the doctor and you didn't have the symptoms of my septic shock that I was in. And the trauma that my body was going through from the infection that was masking the fact that I had had a coronary, it wasn't until a couple weeks later till I knew I had had a coronary. Oh, because I started having some issues with my heart. I was like, I was trying to do more to recover so I could actually get back to work. And I'm like, hey, wait a second, something doesn't feel right here. My heart's bothering me, and my heart's never bothered me before. And I'm like, okay, yeah, maybe it's the. Yeah, the sepsis, but it's not. My heart seems to be. It seems to be more so than any other part of my body. And I'm starting to get these tingles in my hands and feet, and I'm starting to feel lightheaded. What's going on here? This doesn't feel right. So, the next time I went in for a follow-up, I was like, "Hey, doc, this don't feel right. I never had these problems before. Is this linked to the sepsis?" He's like, "Well, some people who have the sepsis, they'll also have." Mild heart attacks because of all the blood clots. And let's do an echocardiogram. And they hook me up and they're like, okay. I'm like, all right, what's going on here? And he's like, you had a coronary. You had a heart attack. I'm like, really? He's like, yeah. And then he asked me, do you remember having these symptoms at any time? I was like, yeah, I do remember one night where I was like, at the computer, and all of a sudden I had this chest pains and this tightness, and I couldn't sit in the chair anymore. I had to go down, I had to go to the bed, and I had to lay down, and this chest pain just continued, and it took about a half an hour to start to subside, and I've never had anything like that before. He's like, well, that's probably it. I was like, that was it. I had no idea. And again, this is where the stoic mindset can get you in trouble, because anybody else had that experience, they would have said, oh, I should probably go to the hospital. Me, I was just like, it's interesting. I don't know what that is. Oh, well, it's passed. Okay, I'm fine. No, you're not fine. You just had a heart attack. So I didn't even know.
So,
Yeah, go ahead.
from my understanding, what happened is that what got you in this hole is that you let your insurance relapse. Now, I'm actually going to get insurance for the first time in my life. One of my friends, he's an insurance broker, and he says I can get a super good deal when open enrollment opens in November 1st. Do you think you're going to go back and try to get insurance on your own again?
So it would have to be attached to my job for me to afford it. Getting private insurance through, well, unless I would do like that Obamacare crap, which actually isn't as cheap as people think. I'm going to have to look into that. So yeah, I don't know is my answer. What are the odds that something like this happens again? Probably slim, but and also because of what happened, it would be difficult because of my health status, right?
They're gonna do that stuff. Yeah.
I mean, they would take a look at me, and then they'd do some tests, and they'd be like, "You're a mess. We don't want to invest in you. We don't want to insure you. Bad bet." So it would be difficult, I think, for me to get at least at this point. So we'll have to see. But you definitely should. That was an oversight of mine, as somebody who's been very healthy, who doesn't get sick. I overlooked something I should not have. Like, I had the attitude, I guess, because it never happened to me. I didn't think that, but it kind of had settled in that regardless that I've been fine my whole life. Yeah, until you're not. Until you're not.
Yeah, that's usually how it works, man. That's why I'm getting insurance. That's why I'm getting insurance, because you never know, man. It might happen, and you're not protected. I mean, your case is like worst case scenario.
Yes, that my case was certainly the worst case scenario for sure.
Definitely, definitely. So pretty much everything you worked for all your life, this bankrupted you, huh?
Yeah, I mean, I had saved for the move and I had, savings. I mean, I'm not an irresponsible person, I've done everything right. But this is the thing. Well, almost everything. You can make one little tiny honest error mistake and that's it. You're screwed. Meanwhile, illegal aliens in New York are getting $10,000 debit cards and stays in five-star hotels. I mean, it's a crazy world that we're living in. So you're not protected, and even if you think you are, you can have all the savings in the world and think you're doing everything right and be independent and have no debt, and you can still end up in dire straits.
Man, how poetic, or how, I don't know what poetic means, but as a philosopher, what do you think of that?
It's just reality. It means that essentially, I wasn't as prepared as I should have been. The insurance thing was a huge error, and moving as I did, that's a risky endeavor right there. I mean, yeah, you can get hit by a bus walking at your front door. You can get mugged. You can get robbed. You can control for these kind of threats, these kind of incidentals to a certain extent, and if you're gonna move, have your insurance paid up because there's a whole bunch of things that can happen when you're driving 1,200 miles and moving your entire life to a new state. And that includes, like, and I probably should have done like travel insurance. Travel insurance probably would have covered this. So that was an oversight on my part. Just no matter how smart you think you are, no matter how wise you think you are, there's always something that's going to be overlooked. It's just that simple. Always something that can be overlooked. So learn from my mistake. And if you ever move, make sure you're insured first.
Yeah, in fact, some countries like Ukraine and Colombia, when you go there to live as a resident, they require that you have insurance.
Well, I'm not surprised.
I don't blame you. So I have to admit, you are taking this rather well. Do you dedicate that to your life as a philosopher, or how do you take it so well? What's your secret?
It's partly because of that. This goes back to my childhood, actually. If people ask me where did my philosophical training come from, I'll tell them it started when I was just a few years old. It started when I was a child. I grew up in hell. Probably the worst parents you could possibly imagine. My father was about as abusive in every way possible. So I learned very early on how to understand the world, how to read other people, how the real world actually worked. And because of the difficult circumstances I grew up in, I'm very resilient, you could say, very adaptable. And because I was constantly having to avoid being killed by my parents, I had to become a very good problem solver and become very good at navigating dangerous situations and people and reading them and reading their moods and reading their emotions and essentially almost like becoming a mind reader in a sense. So when you develop these kind of skills and abilities and you grow up in that kind of harsh environment, you learn how to survive and you develop a very thick skin and a very strong exterior and interior to the point where very little bothers you if you take it the right way and take those lemons and make lemonade. Now, a lot of people come out of experiences like that and it breaks them. It just depends on the type of person you are and how you choose to deal with those experiences later on in life. And that's a choice as well. A lot of people choose to remain victims, they choose to identify as victims, and they choose to wallow in their own misery, and they choose to go to therapy and work on myself. And they end up having that be the end all be all of their life's existence, is working on themselves. And they, in turn, they never escape or deal with or resolve any of the issues that they have chosen and allowed to be caused in their lives by those early experiences. And I chose very early on not to be a victim and to use the experiences that I had in my developmental years as a learning tool, and apply them in a way that would benefit my life in a positive manner when I grew up. I didn't choose to see them as negatives. I don't have any animus towards these people who are now dead, my father, my mother. I don't care. I reached a point long ago of apathy. They mean nothing to me. I feel nothing about them. And the experiences that I had, I see them as education. And so, because of that, I'm able to see this in the same way and deal with it in a similar manner.
How old were you when you left home and never came back?
18. I got out it right at 18. I left, and I never looked back. Never communicated with those people again. They're toxic people, and that's one thing I've learned, and I learned early on, is that family doesn't mean anything inherently. It only means something if it meant something to the people who are your family, and if they treated you in kind. If they were scum and they treated you badly, it means nothing. So the meaning doesn't come from the family, it comes from the actions and the treatment that you received from them. So anybody out there that has toxic family, toxic individuals in your life that are of a familial nature, you can cut them out of your life. You don't owe them anything, you have no obligation to them. And if they are bad for you and they cause you pain and trouble and issues, cut them out. Family means nothing.
Now, I could be very well be mistaken, but your life growing up seems to resemble that of Stephen Molyneux.
It's interesting you bring that up. Yes. We have a lot in common, and I've actually spoken to him on a few occasions. He doesn't like me very much. Probably because we have so much in common, there's a bit of a mirror there. Me and Stephen Molyneux, he's only a couple years older than me. We're very close in age and we have similar experiences. I didn't hit the Bitcoin jackpot as he did, but otherwise we have a lot in common. Yes, you're not wrong there.
Now, I think Stephen Molyneux might have made a video recently, not about you, but preluding to you, because I know in one of your videos you said you hit up Molyneux. You said one of your videos, if you have a dire situation, I'm willing to help you out, but he wouldn't want to help you out. And I think he might have made a video about that recently. I don't know if you.
I didn't know about that. No, honestly, I don't follow him closely. I mean, when I first was turned on to his content, I tried contacting him and I critiqued a couple of his content pieces, which he didn't like. And he expressed it on Twitter once before just ignoring me after that. And, but those were professional critiques. There was never anything personal. And him and I probably agree on like 85% of stuff. Like, I've watched his content. We did have some disagreements insofar as how we deal with family and women. And he doesn't seem to be a big fan of the MGTO, community. But yeah, I did try to contact him. And the only reason was because, A, I do not have an abundance of pride. I'm not a prideful person. Also, the situation I'm in, I can't afford to turn away help. And because we have so much in common, and we both are philosophers, and we had a very similar background, and because I had once watched a video where he was very explicit in saying that if somebody contacted me and they needed help, they needed charity, that would help them. If somebody contacted me and told me that they needed help paying their rent, I would help them pay their rent. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, well, he has come out and said firsthand that he would help somebody in real legitimate need, meaning somebody who ended up in dire straits through no fault of their own. Because, of course, you don't want to help people who are in dire straits through fault of their own, because that's just called enabling. That's not actually charity. That's not going to help them. That's just going to enable them to continue down the wrong path. So I contacted him based upon his own words, which it now turns out were just empty virtue signaling. And I said, hello. I was like, you know, hey, and there's a video on my channel talking about the whole thing. And I posted the receipts of his conversations and our back and forth. And I essentially explained my situation, to which he replied, well, hey, you know, just show me where you defended my deplatforming back in 2020 and I'll help you out. No problem. And I'm thinking to myself, what kind of mercenary is this guy? That's not charity. What is this? Dude, I didn't even know about you at that time. And it was like, wow, this guy, he's got a lot of nerve. He's a total fake and fraud when it comes to his supposed willingness to be charitable. So it was just empty virtue signaling on his part, which is unfortunate, because if he were in dire need, I would actually help him out. I respect the guy. I think he's done a lot of good work, and I can separate the personal from the professional, and I can separate any kind of philosophical disagreements that I have with the guy from any kind of personal beef, which I don't have with him, because I don't let anything professional affect my personal interactions with someone. Apparently, he's not the same way.
So what makes a person a philosopher? Is it a college degree? Or what makes somebody a philosopher, like you, Stephen Molyneux, or Aristotle, for all I know?
So there's a certain level of life experience involved, and a certain level of red-pilling to the nature of reality, and there's also a conscious dedication to learn about how the real world works and to actively pursue truth on a good faith basis, meaning you do so in an empirical manner and not based upon emotion. So you are actively seeking out and embracing truth and new ideas and challenging your own presuppositions and trying to have as few presuppositions as possible. So there is a conscious pursuit of not necessarily knowledge, but truth, to understand truth better so that you acquire the right knowledge and not the wrong knowledge, the right ideas, not the wrong ideas. And so there is a dedication, a lifetime dedication, as it were, to using the mind to understand how to find truth and how reality works to the best of your abilities without letting your emotions or any personal biases get in the way. So there's a number of different factors, I think, that play into that.
Have you ever had any point in your philosophical career where you're like, oh, I was totally wrong about this?
Sure. Yeah. I once used to believe that abortion was okay and good, and or not good, but just fine. And I changed my tune. I changed my tune once I started talking more to pro-lifers and learned a little bit more, and you know, that it is it's a fallacy that all of these pro-choicers have in regards to when life begins. So I have changed my views on things over time. So that's what I'm talking about. You have to be open, right? So too many people, they're never going to ascend to a level where they're going to philosophically engage with the world around them, because they come to a conclusion and then they get stuck and they never change their mind. They're not going to change their mind. And that's what I call ideological polarization. So most people are ideologically polarized. So they're not philosophers and never will be, because their views can't evolve, they can't change. They're not open to new information, new ideas. So too much of their emotions, too much of what makes them who and what they are is tied up in what they believe. So they're not really interested in learning more, because it would require them to change as people. It would challenge who and what they have based themselves and their own internal makeup on. And we all know how much people actually tend to change. Not too much.
Do philosophers tend to believe in God, not believe in God, or have disdain for God?
So I'm kind of agnostic in that regard. I don't know that there is or isn't, and I don't claim to know. I tend to think there's probably something more because I've had some weird experiences that I can get into, but they're a little bizarre. But I've seen some weird shit and I've experienced some weird shit. Weird enough to kind of lead me to believe there's something more than just, we're here and then we're snuffed out and then there's nothing. Whether or not there's a God, I can't say. Don't know. I don't claim to know. I don't have enough information. I'm an empiricist, so I don't go one way or the other when there's evidence lacking, be that for or against. I haven't seen evidence in regards to either. I can't say whether or not there's a God because I haven't seen evidence saying there is none. And at the same time, I can't say there is because I haven't seen evidence for that. So I don't know. That's the best answer I could honestly give you.
Which philosopher or person ever had the most influence on you, be it positive or negative?
Socrates created Western philosophy. And next would be Aristotle and then Ayn Rand. Ayn Rand comes last because some of her views, little bordering on kind of hedonistic pleasure of the moment, at least insofar if they're followed to their logical conclusion. Socrates, because he invented Western philosophy to solve real world problems. He wasn't a pie in the sky, ivory tower guy who just believed in sitting there with a bunch of other self-involved individuals debating about why am I here? What is the nature of existence? And all these subjects don't have anything to do with solving real world problems. I'm very much about boots on the ground, critical thinking, engaging with objective reality, using philosophical tools to solve real world problems. And that's part of the reason I think why many people see philosophy as totally, completely useless, because they don't see it as something useful. They haven't been taught it's anything useful. It's just something to sit around and discuss what's and whys and hows, things that don't have any practical application. I take it and flip it. And I use philosophical tools to better understand the truth and the nature of reality so I can better understand how to solve real world problems. And that's why I created my own school of philosophy called Practical Philosophy, which is 100% focused on solving real world problems.
You probably are not a fan of therapy.
No, I think therapy is a waste of time. It's maybe good for women because they love doing it, but pushing therapy on men is just an extension of the feminist movement and the attempt to feminize men and approach the problem solving that men might employ and flip it and turn it on its head and make it into the men solving their problems the same way women do. Men don't solve problems the same way women do because we're not like women. But of course, as you know, society and the powers that be want to feminize men so as to control them more easily, make them more dependent on their emotions. If somebody's dependent on their emotions, you can more easily manipulate them, and those people are less able to think critically, logically, reasonably, less able to solve their own problems, less able to stand on their own 2 feet, and thereby they're more dependent on the state, which is what the powers that be want. So therapy is just an extension of the feminist movement to feminize men, and it's also a form of control, psychological control, to impose on people ideas of what is normal and what is not, and to shift those and to make things that used to be abnormal and taboo more acceptable and normal. It's also a control mechanism. So no, I'm not a fan of it. It's a bunch of malarkey.
Switching gears to China, you said you lived in China for well over 10 years. What got you to go to China in the first place?
So I lived in China for 14 years, more specifically Shenzhen, more specifically Yantian. It's a small town, well, small by Chinese standards, maybe a 500,000 people, that was on the water. It's great. What got me to move there? Opportunity. So an opportunity came up. There was a friend of mine that had moved there. He lived there for a while. He was working in the electronics industry. Shenzhen is the electronics capital of China. And he says, "Hey, man, you got to come over here. You got a head for logistics and operations, and your skills, you could make a bundle." And I'm like, okay, I'm going to look into that. And he knew somebody that needed some help in these areas. And wanted to work with a foreigner, somebody who spoke fluent English and would be good at logistics and setting up operations. And so I moved over there, and very quickly I found I had a knack for these things, and I set up my own company, and I started doing a distribution of electronics components. And before you know it, I had my own company, and I did that for 4 years. So it was a great opportunity that popped up. I owe it to my friend for suggesting it. Before that, I worked in construction for 20 years. So yeah, I was pretty down to earth guy because I had spent so long in hard physical labor. The first 9, 10 years of working as an adult, I was working for in construction. And then I moved into operations and management, and then from there I ended up going overseas, and then I started producing red pilled MGTO, content. I just was on YouTube one day, came across a video. I was like, "This is interesting. Let me see what. Let me listen to some more of this." And I started listening to more of the red pill stuff. I was like, a lot of this stuff is very right on the money and mirrors things that I've been saying for years. So maybe I should just start making some content and share my observations and perceptions as a philosophical individual with people. And before you know it, I've got like 30 plus thousand subscribers, and I've got tons of people watching my videos. And I'm doing live streams, and people are super chatting, and I'm making quite a bit just from the YouTube content, and it was really incentivizing, and hence I started making more content. And then the adpocalypse came, and before you know it, my channel was kaput, as it were, and suspended until very recently. Like after 7 years, I got YouTube to give it back to me, but it didn't make any difference because they've put so many suppressive tools onto my channel that I might as well not even have it.
Yeah, once you get on YouTube's naughty list, I don't care what you do, you'll never ever succeed, you know. That's just, you can even try a new category.
So yeah, YouTube, they have so suppressed my channel. I get more views on BitChute, which is like 1% the size of YouTube. So that's not even possible. Statistically speaking, there's no way I would get more views on BitChute than YouTube when YouTube's 100 times bigger, unless they are actively shadow banning me. So yeah, that's just reality. I just grin and I bear it, and I continue moving forward.
What made you leave China? Were you worried that they're going to crash cars over there?
So let me explain some things about when I left and the timing of it. So this was right before COVID. So what you got to understand about COVID in China, first of all, COVID was a fiction. Oh, okay, never mind. I got to stop. The COOF. I'll have to cut that part out. Okay. So one thing you have to understand about the COOFity COOF 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 and when I left China, it's bogus. The whole that whole nonsense, it didn't exist. They were just renaming people that died of the flu and the cold. Okay, that's the coof, that's the coof, that oh, you fell off a ladder? Oh, that's the coof. Oh, you get hit by a bus, coof. So That was to gain control of their population. That's why that whole fake scammity scammity pandemic thingy happened. It was just a way to centralize more control into the hands of the powers that already be. In China, they implemented a no koofity koofity koof koof policy where, zero koof to koof, which is impossible. They were locking people in their apartments. They were welding their doors shut. People were getting food sent up to them via, like, they would lower a rope down from the 20th floor. And, one of their kids that hadn't been welded into their apartment yet would put food on the rope and then they would pull it up. Like tons of people died in their apartments. This was all. So you see, Chinese people were getting too affluent. They were getting too rich. They were getting too wealthy. There were too many small, privately owned businesses popping up, which is antithetical to the communist model, which is about centralizing the ways and means of production. So too many people were getting wealthy. Too many people were getting rich. And you got a lot of wealthy people, a lot of rich people that don't need the government. Don't need to rely on it. Well, that's antithetical to communism. So the government was getting scared. They didn't like that their citizens were getting too wealthy and too independent. So they used the scammity panity demic thingy to reverse that and to put their people back into the same kind of economy they were experiencing in World War II. That's all that was about, centralizing power and control, and they're continuing to do it to this day. And part of that was getting inside, outside influences out of China. Now, I left China in September 2019, and just a few months later, what happened? The scammity panity demic thingy. And they were at that time, and I found out later, I had some friends in the PSB. That, for those of you who don't know how China works, is the Public Security Bureau. And I'll explain the law enforcement in China a little bit. They don't have local police. It's not like Guangdong is going to have the Guangdong police force, like is their state police. And then Shenzhen has Shenzhen police. It's all PSB. The entire country is federal, the FBI. Just imagine the FBI. Now imagine everywhere was FBI. You go to New York, the New York police don't exist. They're FBI. You go to Arkansas, there's no Arkansas police. It's FBI. The whole entire country, federalized police. So, again, because it's all about centralized control. And so I spoke to them, and they said, yeah, that was all about getting all the foreigners out. There were too many foreigners in the country. They were bringing in too many ideas that were antithetical to Maoist and Leninist doctrine and antithetical to communist ideology. So we had to get them out. That was all part of the plan. And it used to be like about 650,000 foreigners lived in China when I was there, and now it's like about 300,000. So they've done everything they could. And they wanted to focus mainly on Americans because of their hatred of Donald Trump and us in general. And also, they wanted to make us the big bad boogeyman of the upcoming 3 or 4 years. So they had to get as many Americans out of China as possible because those Americans would be able to a certain extent counter that narrative. If they're there in China, they'd be able to tell the truth to people, and the powers that be in China don't like that. So I was starting to have issues. I was starting to have problems with my business. Shipments would sit in customs for 3 weeks where before they'd sat there 3 days. Orders were late. I was losing started losing money instead of making money. So they were making it impossible for me to do business because I'm an American, so they wanted me out. And if you don't know anything about Chinese people, they're very collectivist. So if you're an American, you represent America. You're not an individual. So that's the way they see the world. That's the way they see people through a lens of collectivism, not individualism, because they themselves are not individual or individualistic. They're not very good at thinking for themselves. They're not very good with critical thinking. They toe the party line. And so you got to go. And I went because, I would have lost everything if I stayed there. And so lucky for me, I got out when I did, because I would have probably been welded up in my apartment and died from starvation if I'd stayed.
Go on, go on. So I was thinking, have you heard of a guy named Sir Panza?
Yes.
Yeah, go ahead, tell me about him.
I don't know him. I've tried to contact him. He's kind of an elitist guy. I know who he is. Me and him were in Shenzhen at about the same time. We both lived in China for about the same amount of years. He's very, very competitive with other content producers who have lived in China, and he doesn't believe that you can have any valid takes. Of course, this isn't what he believes. This is just a marketing ploy of his to try and get people to just listen to him. But he has said this explicitly on his videos that if you didn't learn to speak Chinese while you were in China, it doesn't matter how long you were there, your views can't be trusted. And of course, he speaks fluent Chinese, so you should just listen to him. But I do know who he is, yes.
With China, let me ask you this question because a lot of people are probably going to be asking this who are going to watch it later on. What do you think of the woman?
Ah, the women. Ooh. Well, first of all, let me just say this. They're not very different from women in the West, unfortunately. So the Chinese Communist Party, because they're communists and they need every dime they can get because they're so irresponsible with other people's money, they need to put both men and women to work. So they enforce the one-child policy, they encourage women to go to work, and so feminism, to a certain extent, has a very strong foothold there. So the women there, they're very similar to American, to Western women, and they're very much gold diggerish in their nature. So if you're thinking about moving to China to find yourself a wife, don't. They're just as bad as Western women in that sense. They still have dowries in China. If you're going to marry a Chinese broad, you better have a ton of money to buy her from her parents. You better be able to buy an apartment, even though you can't buy an apartment in China. You just lease it for 70 years, and as a foreigner, you can't actually buy property there, even to lease it for 70 years. And of course, that lease doesn't start. That lease has started well before you bought it. It started when the property developer actually acquired the land. So you might get the apartment for 50 years, but you don't actually own it. And because you're a foreigner there, you can't own it. It's going to be in her name, which is part of course, why she wants you to buy it in the first place. That's not the place to go, but they're easy to bang. I'll tell you that. If you want to have a lot of fun, China's a good place to go. Because they love foreigners, they love the idea of hooking up with a foreign dude, they think it's going to lead to an escape from the country and a green card. So they're very easy to lay, but they're a pain in the ass, just like a Western broad.
Do you still keep tabs on China, meaning you follow news and what's going on in China, or are you totally not following up on China anymore?
I do, actually. Almost daily, I'm watching videos from some of the more prominent content producers about China. I do keep abreast of what's going on there because I lived there a long time. And I have to say, I would love to go back. One of the great things about China is that, well, the way it was, not the way it is now, but the way it was when I was there, is that they generally leave you alone as a foreigner. You're not held to the same kind of rules and oversight, or at least weren't, that a regular Chinese citizen was. Now, I do remember times when I thought I was being followed by somebody, and they were probably a member of the PSB that had been assigned to follow me and see what I was doing and where I was going and who I was interacting with. Jokes on them. I was just getting a meal or going food shopping to get some instant coffee or whatever. Generally speaking, it's a much easier life, a much more laid-back life, or at least it was. Not anymore, though. If I was to retire overseas, which I probably will when I'm old enough to, it won't be to China, unfortunately. Probably some Eastern European country, something like that.
Did you study any Chinese? Pick up any Chinese?
To be honest, I was too busy. So, unlike people like that Sir Pensit dude who worked as a English teacher and had all this free time, I was working 16-hour days. I was working 16-hour days, 7 days a week a lot of times. So I just didn't have the time to indulge in that kind of activity. I'm also not one of these people that has a gift for learning new languages. That has nothing to do with IQ or anything like that. It's just some people have are more inclined and have a gift for that. I don't. Might have something to do with the fact that I was very fully cooked when I went over there, mid-late 30s. So maybe that had something to do with it. No, I didn't learn a lot of Chinese. I had translators for that I paid on a per diem basis.
Now let's move over to Eastern Europe. You just said Eastern Europe is where you want to retire. What made you think about that?
So I've just been seeing some online content producers, and one particular country I've seen a number of them pop up in, and they've talked about how great it is Romania. And I started doing some research and looking into the socioeconomic conditions there, looking into the religious conditions there, looking at the ethnic makeup of the population there, looking at the culture. And I said to myself, wow, this combined with everything I'm hearing, anecdotally at least, it's looking like a pretty good place to be. And there are also a couple other places I've thought about, like Hungary and Poland and Romania. Those are three kind of my top places that I'm thinking about moving to. Romania is kind of at the top of the list, but Poland's a close second. I haven't decided fully where I would want to move to, but it would be one of those three for sure.
To all those three countries, I would take Romania over all those other countries.
I'll keep that in mind.
You know who also is really good? Ukraine.
Well, really? Well, they're having a bit of some issues now with Russia that would make me want to eschew going there. I don't want to end up like Coach Red Pill, but I have a tendency to tell the truth a little too much. I'd get in trouble, I think, if I went to Ukraine. I might end up in the same shallow grave that he did, but maybe after the war with Russia's over, when they become part of Russia, if that ever happens. It's certainly something to think about. If the war ever ends, we'll see what happens.
So what is your outlook? I know with your medical issues and stuff like that, what is your outlook for the next, I would say, maybe 2 years?
So I have looked ahead, and I have thought about, what exactly am I going to do in the next couple years. So first thing, I don't know how my recovery is going to pan out. Like, how much better am I going to get? Like, before I was sick, I got diagnosed with an autoimmune disorder. And so I found out that I have celiac disease, and it explained a lot because I had been getting sicker and sicker insofar as, like, I had no energy. I was just like down and out all the time. I just felt terrible. I didn't know what was going on. I did a lot of research though, and I suspected that was the problem, and it indeed was. So I cut out gluten and I switched to a carnivore diet, and I had so much energy. I had so much mental clarity. It was great. And if I can get back to that point, well, there's plenty of things I can do. If I can't, I don't know. I'll be honest. For the immediate future, the next 3 to 6 months, I'll be living in my car, doing gig work, I guess, doing whatever I can, and pushing myself, testing myself to see how much better my heart gets. Can I get back to the same level fitness-wise, energy-wise, that I was before I went into hospital? I can't really predict, because I don't know how much I'm going to recover. The doctor, he told me you could be back to where you were, or you could be on disability. He was very clear. He essentially said, in cases of sepsis where you actually go into shock and spend a significant amount of time in said shock, you could recover to near where you were before the illness, or you may never recover. You could get back to where you were, or you could end up on disability. So he was very clear. Time will tell. And you know how doctors are, they don't want to commit to a specific answer. And a lot of the time they can't. They're not, they're not psychics. So I suppose he can only go on what he himself has seen, witnessed, experienced in the past. So I don't know enough. All I can do is continue exercising 6 days a week, regardless of how much my heart hurts, regardless of how much my hands and feet and extremities get numb, regardless of how many headaches I have or how much my head throbs, and it feels like my eyeballs are going to bulge out of my freaking head. I can only keep going and hope that at some point that stuff abates, and then I can start exploring other options seriously. But at this point, I don't know enough about how well or extensively I'm going to recover, if that makes any sense.
Do you see yourself continuing to live in America beyond 5 or even 10 years?
No. I can most certainly comment upon. No. Once I, in a couple years, I should be recovered from whatever this was. I'll have saved up, I think, rebuilt enough savings to where I get out. And that's when I'll make a decision. And during that time, I'll do more research, become more informed. I'll put money aside for a rainy day. I'll save. I'll plan my out in every conceivable possible way. And that's going to include insurance this time. And I will know where I'm going. But no, I'm not going to stay in America. It doesn't matter if Trump wins, which he's not going to. I know a lot of people want to have that wishful thinking, but I don't think Trump's going to win because the powers that be don't want him to. So, as much as Kamala is, disliked, I think the fix is in, and I'd be very surprised if he wins because there's still mail-in voting and lots of dead people that are going to end up voting, and enough of the system hasn't been reformed voting-wise. Since 2020, at least in blue states, because there's been no incentive to change it because it works in the Democrats' favor, that I don't think he's going to win. Even if he did, things aren't going to improve that much. Even if he did win, it's going to act as a stopgap for a time, but it's just going to slow the degradation of America. It's not going to stop, let alone reverse it. And let's be real, inflation is one of the big problems we have, and I don't see Trump stopping spending, balancing the budget, or getting rid of the Federal Reserve, which would all be necessary to halt the damage to this country and start to reverse it. So, yeah, I won't be here in 5 years. I can say that for sure.
Do you already have a plan B in motion? Like my plan B, I'm a dual citizen, and even if I didn't have a dual citizenship, I can go to, I'm getting my residency in Ukraine. I already have bases in Colombia. Do you already have a plan B that's already in motion to go overseas?
So it's in my mind, kind of. It's not in place yet, insofar as the resources, because I've only been out of the hospital a few weeks. But yes, before I do anything, I build a very complex lattice type structure in my mind based upon a logic chain. It's kind of hard to describe, but I have a very systematic way of thinking, and I plan everything out quite meticulously when I choose to do so. So every little tiny aspect is already in my head, and as are contingencies. Say, if this doesn't work out, I have this contingency and that contingency, so I have multiple backups. The answer is yes. I already have plans within plans in place, and I advise those of you out there who are of the male persuasion living in America, do the same. Plan your exit, and yes, I have plans, quite a few in my mind. And once I have the necessary resources, I'm gone. So, like I said, in 5 years, I'm not going to be here. And honestly, in 5 years, America's going to be so far gone. I mean, by 2030, things will be so bad here. If you're a white man in America, or just a man, I mean, in 5 years, I don't even think being black is going to protect you if you have a schlong. So, yeah, I would get out. My passport bros out there, I would get out, get your passport, and plan your exit before 2030.
How is Montana compared to the rest of America, especially in places like Phoenix that might have been on the lefty liberal side?
So it's very different. Most of the people here are conservatives, though you do still have your libtardos. They're going to be everywhere. But it is a lot more conservative, and I guess it has a lot to do with the very down-to-nature, down-to-earth interaction with the land and all of the there's a lot of cattle and cow farming ranches out here, a lot of ranches. People are involved in a lot of manual labor. The majority of the population is also white. There's almost no black people here. It's very small black population, very small Mexican, South American population. It's got one of the highest white populations in America. One of the largest Christian Catholic populations in the country. And at the same time, there's a labor shortage here, which was another one of the reasons I took the position here that I was offered, because I knew that if the position somehow didn't work out, that there'd be plenty of work. It's a 300% greater labor shortage, need for labor, than in Phoenix, Arizona. It's got one of the largest shortages of labor in the country. I think one of the only places that has a higher labor shortage is Wyoming, maybe, which is even more sparsely populated than Montana. Basically, nobody wants to be there. So, by the way, guys out there, this is some good advice for you. I would suggest you take it. If you're just starting out in your work, look in states that nobody wants to live in. Google, do a search, use AI to find states that have the largest labor shortages. Those are the places you want to be. These are places where the employers, they can't find anybody for the life of them to do the work. So you're going to get better wages in a lot of cases, and you're also going to have an easier time finding a job and keeping a job, because they have such huge labor shortages, they have that much more need for you and the labor and human capital that you bring to the table. Also, another thing about Montana, they have no sales tax. So you're saving automatically 8-9% of your money right there. If it costs $72, you buy it, you pay $72. So those are some of the differences between Montana and other states, like Arizona.
What industry, not to dox you, but what industry are you mainly looking for work in that's so lucrative in Montana?
Well, I was, but not anymore, because there's some labor involved. Something to do with engineering of electrical nature. I'm not going to get into anything beyond that. But the work itself, it's not super labor intensive, but any kind of work dealing with any kind of engineering is going to require more than I can do right now and may not ever be able to do again. So insofar as like the kind of work I can do now with my current state, limited.
Do you have to worry about brown bears or grizzly bears?
No. I'm in... a larger city, I mean, I might as well, I'll say, because it doesn't really matter. Billings, Montana, is the largest city in Montana. That's where I am. I'm not concerned about anybody coming looking for me. I'm not a paranoid guy. Yeah, like anybody's going to come to Billings looking for the realist philosopher. Get that, or the MGTOW philosopher for that matter, no. That's something you have to worry about here. Like, if you would have go out in the Yellowstone Park, you probably have to worry about that. But I'm not some dingbat dimwit that's going out into the woods looking for, grizzly bears and stuff like that. That grizzly bear dude that got eaten by a grizzly bear. That guy was an idiot. He's running around trying to interact with these bears like they're Winnie the Pooh. It's like, yo, dude, they're going to eat you, man. What are you thinking? And they did eat him. So, no, unfortunately, there's not too much risk of that.
With your social media YouTube career, did you ever get any stalkers, any weirdos, anybody threatening you, coming after you, anything like that?
Fortunately, no. One reason is because who am I? I mean, at my height, I still had a pretty small channel. I mean, yeah, okay. Back in the OG days when MGT, was pretty new, my channel was relatively big, but it wasn't one of the biggest. And now it doesn't even exist because YouTube dumped the vast majority of my followers in that 7 years. Don't know how. I guess they just were systematically, the algorithm was just dumping them on a regular weekly basis to the point where I have no followers left anyway. And most of them are zombies now, dead accounts that are left. And any that aren't, well, I'm shadow banned, so they don't get notified when I post new content anyway. So, no, never really been a problem. I've never been recognized. I never been big enough, as you can see just from talking to me. I know too much. I say too much. I'm too honest. And I don't really have any concern about the negative consequences to my channel, which is part of the reason I'm so shadow banned. So I just don't care. So no, fortunately I've never had a problem with Fruit Loops and wackadoos.
So, what is your future with content creation now that you're shadow banned and you got the current medical situation you're in? Obviously, not making a substantial amount of money through content creation. So, are you going to continue with it, scale it down, maybe even take it forward?
So, the way I look at things is that regardless of what your situation is in life, whether you are sick, you're ill, you got to have some kind of purpose in life. You got to have some kind of destination. It's not that you even reach it, but it's got to be there so you have somewhere to travel toward. So, for me, I'm going to continue making content, and this is something I've learned throughout my life, that regardless of what you're doing, you got to have some kind of goal. There's got to be something that gets you up in the morning and gives you something to strive for, to try and attain, to travel toward. Even if you never reach that destination, you got to actually have a destination, otherwise you're just floating around aimlessly, like you're in a little Like you're in a little boat in the middle of the ocean without an anchor and no land in sight and no compass and no direction to go in. And even if you had a direction, you got no compass to help you find that direction. So rudderless, directionless, that's a bad place to be. So I'm going to continue making content. I've already planned for it. I bought a laptop online, which is actually, I got a good deal. Has like a terabyte of hard SDS, a hard drive, has 16 gigabytes of RAM. I had a very good video GPU on it. It needed a little work, but I fixed it up and I got it working great. And so it'll suffice. And I've got the unlimited Wi-Fi hotspot wherever I am. So I can still continue making content. It won't be as good as this, insofar as maybe audio, but I will use the webcam I'm using now, and it has its own built-in microphone. So it won't be hugely different, except it'll be in my car and my phone, and then transferring the data from my phone to the laptop. But I'm going to still continue making content. And I'm going to continue to try and grow my channel and continue to try and reach people. Will I make any real money? Nah. But that's fine. That's totally completely irrelevant because there's other things I can do to make money and save and ensure that I don't die from starvation, at least in the long term. In the short term, right now, I need the support of my followers out there, which is why I started the GoFundMe. And I'm going to be trying to make daily content for my Patreon, and hopefully that pays off and more people will, follow me there. But yeah, I'm going to continue making content for sure.
How is the prices in Montana? How's the prices for rent? How's the prices for food? Can't possibly be that much.
So there's practical concerns. No, they're not that much, but of course, you can't even get an apartment unless you have like if you have a set and stable job, and also prior rental references are important, and there's a lot of practical considerations in that regard, mainly because the work that would preclude that. But I'm not necessarily sure that I would want to avail myself of that, even if I could at this present time. I'd like to see how the car life thing goes. And the one thing about it is that appeals to me is the how cheap the expenses are so low that you are afforded so much more free time to explore other interests, other activities, without having that big chunk of your finances going toward rent, that I'm not necessarily sure that that's something I want to avail myself of, even if I eventually can.
Yeah, when I was living in a car for 5 years, man, that was the best time of my life. Like, my expenses were probably under $400 or $500. And even when I did get an apartment, I was spending more time in the cab as a taxi driver than I was at my house. So living in the car, man, I have to admit that was the best time ever. And you seem very upbeat going to the car life.
Well, I've done the research, and that's one thing that I'm very good at. A good student, good at learning, and I'm pretty well red-pilled to the reality of the situation. I also know where I am, and that there are plenty of places that I'll be able to park, and I also prepared very well, like buying the best window covers. That seemed to be a big thing if you're going to stealth camp in urban settings. I got the best ones there are, WeatherTech, specifically made for my vehicle. And you cover the inside of your windows, and what shows to the outside is just black. And I already have heavily tinted windows to begin with, so nobody can see in your vehicle. So they don't even know you're there unless you're making a ruckus. And it's things like that. And I realized very early on in exploring this option, exploring it because I knew I wouldn't have any other options at this time because I'm messed up. My heart's a mess. And so I'm not going to be able to work. So, I got a car. So the reality is I'm going to be sleeping in that, or, there is no other option. That's the option I have. That there's some things I'm going to need to make it ideal, to make for the situation it is, the ideal car living situation. So I just started doing research. Okay, I'm going to need a power supply so I don't run out of juice. What else? Okay, fans. What else? Okay, a window cover in case I need to crack the windows when it rains. People then still won't be able to see into the car because there's this lip from the window cover that covers the windows. Okay, I'm going to need window covers. Okay, what else am I going to need? So I just did the research. I'm going to need X, Y, and Z. And again, a lot of the donations, all the donations I've received have went toward getting that stuff. And there's still other stuff that I'll need for the winter. But we're not in winter yet. Winters here do get kind of cold. And yeah, I know a lot of people are like, well, Arena's philosopher, you have a car. It's car life. Why don't you just go somewhere warmer? I can look at that option when the time comes, but there's a lot of practical considerations to take into account. So do I actually want to go somewhere else where a lot of other people who had the same thought are going to go? There's something to be said for staying in a place that nobody else wants to be in. You don't have a lot of company. I mean, you don't have a lot of company in that situation. You don't have as much to worry about insofar as dealing with dregs and bums and crime and a lot of other types of situations you're going to run into with vagrants if you go somewhere that's much more comfortable in the wintertime. So there's a lot of things I need to consider once winter comes. But Yeah, I'm upbeat about, I don't know that I would say upbeat. I'm pretty realistic about it, and I know that I've gotten everything I need to maximize comfort. And because I've done so much research, I know what to expect. And I don't have a fear of death. I'm not afraid of dying. So if you're not afraid of dying, you're not afraid of much else. So I'm not really afraid. So I don't know that I would call it upbeat. I'm just realistic without fear, if that makes any sense.
It does make sense. It does make sense. I did it for 5 years in California, so unless it gets like super duper cold, I don't think anything is gonna kill you. Do you have a triple A, what you may call it, a triple A membership in case something goes wrong with the car and you need it to be towed or something?
Well, fortunately, I have probably one of the most reliable cars out there, and it's running 100% perfectly. The worst thing I could imagine happening is a flat. I can take care of that. I can change my own oil and transmission fluid. I can do a lot of stuff myself, and I have plenty of tools in my storage unit. Again, a good thing about staying put as I am and not going full car life nomad is that I have more resources because I have that storage unit and I can have a lot more stuff there that allows me to do more of my own work on my car. So I don't think I have to worry about that too much. And also because I'm not going to be traveling a lot, like I'm going to be staying within the city limits in a city that itself is maybe 4 miles across. Probably not too much to worry about. Yeah.
Yeah, this is going to be your first winter in Montana.
Yes, I just moved here. So it'll be the first. I did my research. Coldest it'll get is down to around minus 26.
Ouch.
Yeah, well, it'll be warmer in the car, so, and I already have a sleeping bag that's good down to minus 30, and that's if that's all you have, which it isn't. But so what I would need is a bit more of a powerful power supply. I bought like the smallest. It's pretty good. It's good for just starting out. It's called a Jackery 300, so it's good for powering something up to 300 watts. I would need to get something more powerful, like a 1,000 or a 1,500 watt portable power supply. That's going to run more like 400 or 500 bucks. So not cheap, but something like that would then allow you to buy a portable, like fit in the palm of your hand electric heater. And the inside of a car ain't very big. So you got a 1,000 watt portable heater that'll fit in the palm of your hand, it'll heat the entirety of the inside of your car, or you just get a heated blanket and you stuff that inside your sleeping bag with you and you're good to go.
Yeah, I'll take the heated blanket over having a 1,000 watt generator in there. The heated blanket would be it. You got a propane grill or something, right?
Yes, I bought one today, 20,000 BTU. Bought a bunch of iron skillets as well, heavy duty stuff, so I can cook on two skillets at once. I already have the propane adapting kit for that. I just need to buy a propane canister. Initial expense, $57, but to exchange it, it's like 1250, and a 15-pound tank that'll last me a month, at least. So for $12 a month, you're cooking your food. That's pretty good. So I'm not complaining there.
Yeah, what I did is that I would go to the barbecue parks in California. Coal is expensive, so you don't have to worry about that.
No, I've got that tank and a portable table as well, so I can set it up wherever. I can set up inside my storage unit. Basically, the plan is to. I also have vacuum seal containers. The plan is just, before I start my day, doing whatever work I'm going to do, or whether I'm going to be, making content or reading or working that day, I'll just go to my storage unit. Go inside, light up a portable lantern or something, cook up my 3 meals for the day, and then go about my day, lock the unit up, and then I'll go back to it at night and set my car up for overnight. And how I did that was I have removed the backrests. So the way that my car is you can't tell that it's a CarLife car, but I removed the hinges for the backrests. And so they just snap into place via a connection at the top where you pull a tab and they unhook. And there were hinges there for them to just lay down, but I removed the hinges. So now I pull the tab, I can take the whole seat out, and I take out the backrests, and my back seat becomes part of my bed, and it goes all the way into the trunk. The trunk becomes bed as well. It's a 75-inch long, mostly level platform to put my trifold 5-inch thick memory foam mattress on, and that's how it gets converted to a car life. Then I drive to wherever I'm going to sleep, wake up, do my exercising that I do every morning at 4 or 5 o'clock, then go to Planet Fitness, get a shower and shave, then head on to the storage unit to cook up my meal, convert the car back to daily work life, and then go about my day and then rinse, repeat.
You wake up that early, 4 or 5 in the morning?
Yeah, I'm on old man time. I go to bed at like 8 o'clock, 7 o'clock. That's just how I've always been, or at least for the past 20 years. I found it's the most conducive way to work out, to exercise. I'm 5'11", my body fatty right now. I did put on some weight. I got a little fat because I haven't been able to exercise for a month and a half. A little fat being about 10% body fat. Before that, it was about 8. Maybe that was a little thin because veins were popping out of me like you wouldn't believe. So you could see all the veins in my body. Vascularity was good. Yeah, I do get up that early. I would recommend that everybody out there tries to get up as early as they possibly can and get your exercise in before you even eat. Oh, but I'm hungry, realist, when I wake up. Nah, well, just drink a lot of coffee. That's what I do. I just suck down a lot of coffee and then I get my workout out of the way and then I eat my breakfast and shower and shave. So if you're somebody that has a difficult time exercising, make it a habit to do it right when you get up and then do it at the same time every day and just get a routine going. And that for me has been how I've been able to stay consistent for, 30 plus years doing the same exercise routine every day.
Wow, I mean, I have to admit, doing better for the probably 8 years. What do you think made you become so healthy, fit, determined, and all that good stuff?
I started studying the sword when I was 10, and it was what I was studying was the Japanese sword, more specifically a style called Niten Ishiryu. This is a two-handed sword style, meaning you use one sword in each hand. Don't practice it anymore because I've been practicing the sword for so long. What I do is my own style now, not what I was taught. You do something for long enough, it's going to become your own, and it's going to change and be modified and become yours, and it's not going to be what it was. But I always wanted to master the sword. It was always something I was very passionate about. And once I started doing it, now I'm going to master this. I'm going to become one of the best in the world. I don't care how long it takes. And I indeed am. Not that it has, benefited me all that much because I've never had any real inclination to commercialize it, to teach large classes or to teach anybody, though I have taught some people in the past. It was only on an individual level. I suppose I probably could have monetized it to a great extent. Been one of those people teaching Gal Gadot and shit in movies, how to fight and use swords and done movie choreographing if I wanted to. But it was always something that was a very personal and private pursuit for me, and I never really had a desire to commercialize it. Meanwhile, because of that kind of pursuit, I had the world record in the draw cut. Basically, how fast could you draw and cut properly with the sword? Properly meaning you actually have to hear it cutting. And also, I'm the only person, as far as I know, that can perform proper cuts with proper technique with the Subarito in the entire world. Subarito is a very big tool that looks like a boat oar, and it's quite heavy. And its use was popularized by Miyamoto Musashi, a venerated Japanese swordsman, wrote the Book of Five Rings. Well, I use that with one hand, just like he did. Nobody else in the world can do that. And I do it with 1,000 cuts, 1,500 cuts, 2,000 cuts, one-handed. Nobody else on this planet can do that. But I never had a desire to make money off that or anything. And even if I did, we're in the wrong economy for it. So maybe in the 90s I could have done that, but there's not much that people see insofar as learning the sword is practical. That would be a luxury, a learning experience. There's plenty of things that's practical in regards to learning it, but people don't see that. And unless you have a lot of excess income, which most people in America don't, you're not going to learn that. So, wrong economy, even if I wanted to monetize what I've learned and actually teach people. Nobody has the cash to splurge, and it would be splurging to learn how to use the sword. So, that's not going to do me much good.
Isn't there like a sword fencing in the Olympics?
That's fencing. That's a little different. That's European and it's sport. So that's sport. Fencing, it's not really sword work. It's very specialized. It's based on rapier techniques and saber techniques. But it's not super realistic. What I do is much different. What I teach is extremely realistic and 100%, just like my philosophy, practical in its application. So if somebody learns the sword from me, they're going to learn proper cutting technique. They can learn how to fight. They can learn how to spar. They're going to learn how to adopt a state of mind, which the Japanese refer to as mushin, which is no mind. They're going to learn how to be 100% present in every moment and have perfect focus and concentration to such an extent where they're able to read every single movement that their opponent is going to make before their opponent even makes it. This is very, very in-depth stuff. It's not easy to learn. And those kind of skills very much help you in a practical way in other aspects of your life. But it takes a master to teach these things. There's not very many of them left in the world. I'm one of them. And you're not going to learn that kind of stuff in a fencing class. That's a sport. That's like soccer and such. Maybe fun, but not nearly as efficacious in terms of the practical, real-world applications you're going to get out of it as if you learned what I have to teach.
So you are probably in a Guinness World Record book or some sort of a record book, correct?
No, my record is totally unofficial. It's on video. I didn't submit anything to a Guinness. And those records are all BS anyway. A lot of guys that it's parlor tricks. A lot of it, like cutting the football, like cutting the baseball out of the air, or cutting a bullet out of the air. Those are total complete parlor tricks. And most of these draw cuts are made with the hand already on the blade. Proper draw cut. Your hand is not on the handle of the sword. You would have to have your hand at your side, and you have to grab and draw and cut all in one motion. And I would be happy to post a video of that record. You can go look it up and time it yourself. It's the fastest. But again, I was never concerned about accolades or adoration or, so-called legitimate, recognized records. None of that stuff ever mattered to me.
Have you ever been to Japan?
No. I learned from a World War II veteran when I was 10 years old, and he had been in Japan for many years. And after the war, he learned the sword there, and he learned it there, and I learned from him. Long time ago.
Have you been other than China?
What's that?
What countries have you been to other than China?
Just China at this point.
Okay. So tomorrow is when you are going to start car life, huh? Did you already have a test run for it or not yet?
I got everything in my storage unit. I've already done a test run in my head. Same difference. So, yeah, the only things I have left to do, I already purchased the cooler. I got to go pick it up tomorrow because I bought it online, which saved me $10. So I'm going to pick that up in the morning, come back here, fill it up with ice, take everything out of the fridge, put it in there, fill up my 5-gallon water jug so I don't have to worry about that. I'm going to cook up enough food to last me all day tomorrow and the next day. Still got to get the Planet Fitness membership, which I will do tomorrow afternoon. Scout out maybe some of the places I plan on sleeping. The Walmarts are easy, but you can't stay at them every night. You could, but it would be too predictable. And so I wouldn't want to stay at any of the Walmart locations. For those of you who don't know how Walmart works, depending on where you are, if you're in a heavily populated, well-traveled tourist community like where I am, the Walmarts are going to have overnight camping, overnight RV parking, overnight van, overnight car parking in their parking lots to encourage those people to stay there because they're also going to shop there. So, but there's only 3 Walmarts here. And even if there were like 10 Walmarts, I wouldn't want to park at Walmart every night because that'd be too easy to find if there was some nut job out there come looking for me. So there are other places that I will probably camp out. And I'm going to need to do some reconnaissance there. And also, I'm going to need to find some places to spend some free time. I need to find the local libraries. Need to find the local bookstores. There are those as well. I need to find the local parks because I exercise every morning. And unlike this hotel room I'm in, I can't swing a sword around in my car. So I got to find reliable places to exercise when I wake up in the morning where I'm not going to be bothered by wackadoo nutjob, a homeless, vagrant type crazy people. So there's a lot of things I need to do tomorrow, some things I still need to do today and tonight. I'm still in the process of transferring all the files from my desktop PC tower to my new laptop. Once I get that done, I'm going to wipe my laptop, and that includes all my history and passwords. I'm not my laptop, but my PC tower. And since I don't have a need for it anymore, I might sell it, put it on OfferUp. And, you know, since I spent $2,000 building it, I'll probably be able to get a whopping $750 out of it when I sell it. So that's a great deal. Not a great return on investment, but I've had it for years. I've gotten my fun out of it. I've gotten my use out of it. So I'm okay with that. And that's a decent chunk of change. It's certainly worth that, if not more. Same for the monitor. I paid, this is a 36-inch monitor. Maybe I think I paid over $300, so I'm sure I'll be able to get a whopping $150 for it. Maybe $200 if I really finagle. And, you know, if I give away the speakers with it and the microphone and my external sound card, maybe I can get $200. So we'll see, but I'll probably sell that stuff. And, of course, after I sell the PC tower, I'll put a condition that he has to let me wipe it and install a new Windows 10 because I don't want this guy having my old PC with what might be remnants of my prior personal data on it. Not that he would have much choice because you have to have a password to log into it, so he'd have to let me install a new operating system on it, which I would think he would want anyway. So I have all my stuff planned out, what I'm going to do, and of course there'll be little incidentals, things that'll pop up that I hadn't thought of, unexpected things, little tidbits of learning experiences that'll crop their ugly heads up in the first week to shake out the bugs and learn all the little stuff I need to know along the way. But I have the vast majority of stuff worked out in my head. And I figure the first week will be a test run just to work out the kinks and get used to it, as it were. And then once I've reached a certain point, like energy-wise, or where I'm not like feeling like I'm going to pass out after I exercise, that's probably when I'll start doing gig work. Well, actually, I'll probably start doing gig work within the next week. I don't have the luxury of waiting until I like am 100% physically. Oh, I'll try anyway. I don't know. We'll have to see how I feel. That is probably wise that I do wait until I actually start to feel better. Because the doctor was pretty clear. The harder you try to push yourself, the more you could set back your recovery. So I need to be wise about that. So yeah, that's where I am right now in my journey.
Is your doctor a male or a female?
Dude.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the thing about the Carl Life that you're going to be undertaking is that gym membership is going to be a big plus for you.
Yeah, I looked at it, and it's like $25 a month for like the platinum, but you get a lot of cool stuff. Like, you not only do you get to, use the showers, use the bathroom, use the locker room where you'll be able to shave and shower, but they've got like massage chairs and just a lot of added little perks and that you don't get with the $15 a month base membership. So, yeah, and yeah, you use the bathroom obviously, and you need to do your number two in the morning. As long as you're pretty regular, you don't have to worry too much about that. As far as number one, well, we're guys, so we don't have to worry about that too much. So yeah, that's definitely a major plus, and there's a bunch of them here in Billings. There's a lot of Planet Fitnesses, so and it's a small town to begin with. So yeah, it's it shower every day or every other day. Not a real problem. Probably every other day in the winter. I don't think it'll be too bad. I'm used to, I mean, I can really handle a lot of hardships, so, and I've prepared pretty well. So I think I'll probably be okay.
So, other than Walmart, what gig companies have you signed up with or planning on signing up with?
So there's a Veyo, Veyo. It's like a medical transport company. And so, some old person or young, whatever, somebody with a medical issue who doesn't have reliable transportation, they go to the doctor. The insurance company will pay to transport them there and home. So Veyo is like an independent medical contracting company that subcontracts out to clinics and insurance companies to drive these people around. So I think it pays $1 a mile, which doesn't sound great initially, but when you consider that a lot of times you don't get that driving with Uber or Lyft. So it's not horrible. And when you take into account, I only got to make $600 a month, just that's just to survive. Anything else above that is gravy. That's not too bad.
I mean, your car, the amount of abuse your car is gonna take.
600. So, I don't want to. I'm not going to say what car I'm driving, but it doesn't have that many miles, and it's a very, it's one of those vehicles that you wouldn't be surprised to see that it has 400,000 or 500,000 miles.
Okay.
It's one of those. So, as long as you take good care of it, change the oil regularly. Change the transmission fluid on a regular, make sure that the transmission filter is changed. It's going to last you a long, long time. I'm not too concerned about that. And by the way, it's more about how you drive, honestly. But you're talking about 600 to 1,000 miles a month. That's not actually much abuse. That's about what a normal person might drive in a year if they're commuting 10, 15 miles, 20 miles to work. So that's nothing outside the bounds of realistic wear and tear on a normal car, on a yearly basis. You're talking what, 10, 12,000 miles a year. That's not anything absurd.
No, it's not. But obviously, if you want to save up to like go overseas or do something better, you gotta put in literally more miles.
Yeah, well, that's where, so yeah, I mean, that's something to consider, obviously. Again, that is not what I'm looking at as my, like a multi-year plan. That's just immediate. So don't die, right? Like, so I survived the winter. Because I imagine it's about the least laborious kind of work I can think of that I can do, or that I might be able to do in the next month or two that I can do. So it's short term, basically.
Yeah, from a short-term perspective, that's a very good outlook for it. And then later on, maybe how much is the TSA paying? Like $20 an hour?
It depends, 21 to 23. So it's not horrible when you consider benefits. Again, I'm not necessarily sure that's something I want to pursue. Because again, there are some things I want to do that would require more time. I would like to develop my philosophical system more. I would like to write a book on the subject. I would like to have more time to create more content. So I would probably be more inclined toward part-time work if and when I recover fully. I may not. I may not recover enough to do I don't know that it heavy. I suppose that would be medium labor, but it's not low intensity, low labor work. You're going to be on your job, photo feet all day. You're going to be lifting heavy bags of luggage all day. I might not be able to handle that, and so I have to have other things I can do that'll pay the bills, that'll cover everything. And again, if you do the car life thing full time, and you really perfect that, you don't have many expenses. So you'll have a lot of free time and a lot of free cash. I mean, who knows? Maybe I end up doing the car life thing for a couple years and just end up working part-time once I recover enough to do so. And you could still save $10,000, $20,000.
Yeah, that's what I did back in my LA days. I was doing background work. So I was living in a car and just swap up, do background work, make a quick $100 every now and then. I was living like a king.
Yeah, and then once I've saved up enough and I've recovered from my illness, I sell everything and, have 25, 30 grand, move overseas, and get the hell out of here forever. So, like I said, I have plans upon plans on my head, and if this doesn't work out, then I can do this, and if that doesn't work out, I can do this. And I have all sorts of ideas in my head based upon where things go. So, okay, I recover this amount, I can do this. If I don't recover that amount, I can do that. If that doesn't work, I can do this. So I have every contingency covered. Planning and logistics, that's what I do. So I have plans upon plans based upon what the outcomes are. So depending on what happens, I already have a plan for that.
Now, I know this is a long way forward, but when you move overseas, like, what do you plan on doing to get income overseas?
That's a good question. So I have a lot of skills. I may open a business. I may I actually I don't really get into the details. Some of the details are but I have a lot of human capital and skills that I can employ. Probably would start my own business. I don't want to get into the specifics of what. It wouldn't be terribly difficult. I have a lot of contacts overseas still based upon my prior work. So it wouldn't be terribly difficult for me to get back into the same business, just in a different country.
Okay, so to live overseas comfortably for a single man, especially in a place like Romania, like $1,500 a month will be fine.
Yeah, that would not be a problem for me. Unfortunately, my business isn't one that I can set up or do here in America. There's too many regulations. It's too difficult. It costs too much money. That's another thing I researched in looking at those three countries I brought up earlier. And I looked at the viability based upon regulatory requirements, and it was doable there. So what's not possible here is quite doable there. So a lot of it has to do with geographics. Again, I'm out of hospital a few weeks, so it's going to take me some time to get there. But I will get there.
And the thing is, if you are doing something overseas and you're on the, if you legit get on disability, that can take care of your living expenses overseas.
I already thought about that, yes. I thought about that as well. I already have that contingency planned as well if that happens. Like I told you, that's another thing philosophers are very good at, logic and planning ahead and predictive capabilities, if they're worth their salt, that is. So I already thought about that as well. Yes, yes, yes. I already have that possibility in the works if I cannot actually get back to where I was and be able to work a certain amount of hours and make beyond a certain amount. It's not my ideal. I would prefer to be, well, I don't know that I want to work 16 hours a day anymore, but 10 or 12 is certainly, I would love to get back to a point where I can do that, but I may not be able to. I just, that's just the reality. I'll have to accept that. You know, sometimes life deals you a crappy hand and you just have to, you know, do your best. And once you've done your best, if it's still not enough to be where you want to be, just got to accept it. So that's a contingency I've also planned on. So, yeah. But that, yes, I've already planned for that possibility as well.
Do you miss the type of work you did back in China?
Yes, and I would love to go back. Yeah, I would love to go back, but you can't. And if I were to dwell on that, I wouldn't be living, and I would just be, so I don't dwell on it. If I think about it, it's in a fond way, because that was the best time in my life, that 14 years. But time machines ain't a thing yet, and even if they were, be a bad idea to try and go back in time. And even if you did, it wouldn't change the present, if you know anything about how the space-time continuum works. But regardless, yes, I do miss it. It would be nice to go back. But the best I can do is, on occasion, reminisce. And that's about it.
And I'm really wondering. I mean, I have an Egyptian citizenship. Maybe I can go to China with that.
Maybe. Just don't go there as an American. Use your, Egyptian passport. You won't have too many problems. It's the Americans they have a problem with, not people from Egypt. So as long as you use your Egyptian passport, you'll be fine.
I'm going to look at that then. Yeah, that is super good to hear just about. I mean, we probably got your entire life. Our life story going. Is there anything we missed?
I mean, oh, sure, there's lots of tiny stuff in the 50 plus year time span, but we got a pretty good overview, I would say.
Okay, yeah, I have to admit, that's one hell of a life you live.
Well, thank you. I hope it's not over yet. I hope there's still some left.
Yeah, you got plenty of years, God willing.
Yeah, hopefully another 40 or 50. That would be nice.
Really? You think another 40 or 50? Wow.
I don't know. I have no idea. I'm just saying hopefully. I have no idea. It could. It's possible. Lots of people live to be 90.
Yeah, that is true. That is true, especially if they're healthy and stuff like that. So take away this medical issue. Did you ever have anything like high blood pressure, high cholesterol, anything genetic or anything like that?
No, I've never been sick. I don't get sick. Yes. I mean, never had any health issues of any kind. I mean, minus a few food poisoning incidences in China, I've been very healthy.
Yeah, I'm thinking about China, man. I've been thinking of going to China as far back as 2009. I don't know. Something about China, I don't know why. And Taiwan doesn't do it.
Well, if you're going to go to one of the first tier cities, Beijing, Shanghai, or Shenzhen. You don't want to go to a backwater. I mean, unless you really, really want to have the down and dirty rural experience. And of course, keep in mind, backwater in China is a major city anywhere else. But If you want to experience like the good life, as it were, you need to be in a first-tier city.
I mean, you did mention that the Chinese woman would be looking to get with a Westerner simply to get out of China. Is China that bad? Is it like bad poverty-wise? Is it bad like government-wise?
There's not a lot of opportunities because of the regressive communist regime's policies, and there's zero coofity-coof-coof policies to destroy the economy. So now there's no jobs, and what jobs there are pay even worse than they did before the coup. So, yes, it is that bad.
Do you think the coup was governments worldwide trying to get their population to like rely more on them?
Yes, 100%. That's all it was. There's never been any evidence that it even exists. Nobody has it to show you and say, here's the virus. It's fake. It's fraudulent. It was never a real thing. It's just a bunch of. I already did. You remember I did a video about this years ago, which you can still find at MGTOW TV, where I went over the numbers and I did the math in regards to a global population. Increase, decline. I looked at the disease rates, I looked at the global population, and I looked at the death rates compared to the growth rates, and there was no diminishing in population. They said X amount of people died this year from the coofity-coof, but it wasn't represented anywhere in the global death rates. In fact, the global population went up. When it should have went down, all they did was they named everybody that died. They just looked at all the this. Oh, okay, this is coof coof. This is coof coof. That's coof coof. They just, if you're an old person that died, they said you died from it. It was all a scam, and it was all a scam to not only centralize more control into the hands of the government, but it was also a way to. Oh, geez, I lost my train of thought here because the camera went out of focus. But it was also a way, it's centralized control, and to get people to take the, we know what they were getting people to take, the poka poka Pokemon pokety poke poke that has acted in a lot of cases as a vasectomy for men. So it's about population control. It was about genetic control. It was about economic control. It was about control, period.
You think a lot of people see it like that now, or not really?
Not really. Most people are sheep and stupid. And actually, the majority, 50% of people have IQs below 100. For the average IQ in America to be 100, 50% of people's IQs are actually below 100. By the way, it's down to like 95 now. It stopped being an average of 100 a long time ago. So the average IQ in America has dropped to 95. So, yeah, most people are idiots. So, yeah, I don't think most people think it was fake, a fake demic. Most people are stupid, I'm sorry to say.
Man, that's so the shots. I mean, I didn't take any of but yeah, even I myself thought that stuff was for some sort of a human population control. Surprised a lot of people didn't see that.
No, the shots were, and again, these were to rewrite certain. Oh, a lot of people say, "Oh, it wasn't about rewriting your genetic code, the mRNA." Yeah, it was peripherally. So people don't get this, but yeah, it is a control mechanism. It's a population control mechanism. It's why so many people are having health issues even now. All this is about population control and getting it down to a manageable level. It's all about centralizing control. If you want to centralize control, you have to drop the population to a manageable point. It's all about global control. So globally, you have to drop population. And all you got to do is look at the outcomes. Even the Mexicans are having less kids. Even they're not replenishing at replacement rates anymore. And Americans, they've been below replacement for a while. So is the entirety of Europe. The only people that are reproducing reliably above replacement rates in America are the Amish, and the only Western countries that are reproducing is Russia above replacement. So You know, even China's not replacing. They're not replacing their population. They pushed female empowerment and the one-child policy a little too hard there. Government me more, daddy. They pushed government centralized control too hard there. So now the women in China don't want to get married and have kids either unless there's some kind of big giant dowry that they're going to get. And even then, it's hard to get them to commit. So, yeah, not a lot of people are having enough kids anymore. And South Korea is horrid. They've got, like, the worst birth rates of any country anywhere. So all populations globally are dropping except for a handful of countries. And in America, there's only one community, the Amish, that are actually reproducing above replacement. So just look at the outcomes if you want to know what the agenda is. Population reduction.
Yeah, a lot of people out there really are useless eaters, though.
And a lot of useless eaters, and that's what the global elites call them. They call them useless eaters. They want, I mean, at the same time, they want more of them. They want less of the productive people. They want less of the critical thinking, intelligent people, because those people can't be controlled. Those people can stand on their own two feet. Those people are not reliant on the government, and those people can start businesses, be entrepreneurs, accrue wealth, and perhaps someday compete with them, the Amazons and the Walmarts of the world, and they don't want that. So let's just have everybody be a useless eater.
That's exactly what's going on, man. That's exactly what the elites want, and
it's
got- I think I think I already told you this before, but I just mailed off my paperwork to Tallahassee to get a MGTOW party for the state of Florida going.
Yes, yes, we could talk about that. I'm gonna interview you soon. Yeah. This is very interesting. And when you told me that earlier in our correspondence, it made me think that maybe I should look into doing that here in Montana. That might not be a bad idea.
Because once you have one MGTOW party up and running, it's so easy. All you need is like three people. No money is needed, no government. You really don't need anything other than a constitution, which is really copy and paste. Mm. You know, that's it. Just three people, a chair, co-chair, and a secretary / treasurer. Mm. That's it. For a party, that's it.
Yeah, not only that, but it'd be very easy to get media coverage because it's so controversial by the current propagandist media's standards that they'll just pounce on a story like that, and you'll get all of the media coverage, all the publicity you could ever want. And when that happens, you're going to get people signing up, and then you're going to get people wanting to donate and support the party and help it grow. So that's your route towards growth. You get it legitimately recognized and registered, and then you contact the media, and the media will do your job for you.
I don't know about the media. They hate MGTOW.
Well, yes, but any, of course, but that's you could go by the logic that there's no such thing as bad publicity. All publicity is good publicity. That's not always the case, but just keep in mind how little people trust the media nowadays. So any coverage that you do get, most people are going to take it with a grain of salt and then do their own research. So I still think it would be a win-win if the media knew about this, because they would be just ravenous to cover it. And yeah, they would be biased. But biased coverage is better than no coverage, especially when you're a brand new party trying to grow.
Absolutely. Now, like here in the state of Florida, to be a major party, you need 5% or more of the registered voters to be registered for your party. So the only major political parties here are Democrats, Republicans. Everybody else is like small, minor political party. So if MGTOW becomes a major political party, dude, that we're going to be on a whole different level.
Yeah, so that's why I said you're going to need mainstream media coverage, whether you like it or not. It's just the nature of the beast, and it's a reality of the situation. So you don't like them, you do like them, you don't really have a lot of choice. So do what Trump did and use them to your advantage. I mean, they hated him, and their media coverage was super biased, but that's part and parcel, to a large degree, what helped him get elected in 2020 was all that free media coverage they gave him in their hate watching and their hate interviews of him. They actually did him a favor. So that's what you need to do. Embrace the mainstream media. Use them while they think they're using you.
Yep. So how you holding up? I mean, I know you have a hard time when you do videos talking for a little bit over 2 hours. How are you holding up so far?
Well, I had three energy drinks that have God knows how much caffeine, and
Oh my.
today is a day of rest for me. So, like, I don't have any exercise today. So, as long as I don't do anything, I'm pretty okay. And also, it does help to talk about something I'm passionate about. It does help to, the chatting with you, something I really care about. It's an interesting conversation, and the adrenaline is pumping and all that. How am I going to feel afterwards?
Yeah.
Horrible. I'm going to feel like garbage and it'll take me a few days to recover. But that's life, and I think it's worth it to have this conversation.
Oh, absolutely. Is there anything that we have missed before we call it today?
No, I don't think so. You've been a very good interviewer and you asked a lot of good questions, and I really enjoyed the conversation.
Why haven't you made the switch from BitChute to Rumble? Honest, I mean, Rumble is competition, but you'd probably be better off at Rumble than BitChute.
Well, I post on both of them, but I actually get more views on BitChute. It's just to cover more area. I figure that if I just keep posting there, I can grow slowly, organically. But actually, Rumble shadow bans me to a certain extent.
Really? Why? Why do you think that? I mean, they're all about freedom of speech.
You would think, but they're bigger than BitChute, and I get less views there. So BitChute actually has the most freedom of speech, believe it or not. They
You made any money off of BitChute? I'm just trying to compare those to other.
No, I've made money off of none of those platforms. So that's what a lot of people don't know, that I've been producing content for 8 years now and made no real money. I do it because I want people to know the truth. I want to help people think. I want to help people recognize truth. I want to help people to be able to think for themselves, stand on their own 2 feet, understand the world as best as they possibly can without having to rely on others. And I just produce my content out of love for trying to help other people. It's not because there's any money in it for me. It'd be nice if there was. I think that's why so many people have actually donated to my GoFundMe, because I think they see that I've been, kind of, slaving away on content all these years, and I just do it because I enjoy it. And maybe those people that donated did so because they recognize that and want to pay back some of what they got out of the content I produced, or pay it forward. I don't know how they want to, or how you might want to look at it, but I think there's kind of an element to that there of appreciation for all my hard work. I don't know. I'm just, maybe that's wishful thinking.
So before I let you go, what do you think about the death of Susan Wojcicki, the lady responsible for thousands of other people?
I never liked that broad with that Jersey accent, or hers, whatever that accent was of hers. I can't stand that woman. She's everything that's wrong with America. She was a libtard. Just, I mean, censorship. And if you don't view things the way I view things, I gotta shut you up. She was just a shill. She was just a corporate shill, and she was one of these, low IQ, low merit individuals that's a total complete sellout, would sell her mother for a nickel. I mean, hey, yeah, I'm your yes man. I'll do whatever you want me to do so long as you pay me well. Hey, I'm a woman and I'm of a certain ethnic, religious persuasion background to boot. And so, give me some shekels and I'll say and do whatever you want me to do. I'll toe the party line, and I'm much more inclined to do so, especially since I have no real talent or merit or human capital to exchange for all those shekels. So, yeah, give me money. I don't like the woman. I never liked her. She's largely to blame for my channel being banned back in 2017. So, yeah, I think you could pretty much gather how I feel about her, or felt about her. Yes, rest in peace, Susie. I'm dancing a jig. I'm dancing a jig inside. That'll tell you all you need to know.
Man, I have to admit, man, I'm talking to people from MGTOW like yourself and so many others that I've known going on to almost 10 years. But yet, when it comes to women, man, you can know a woman. You can be married to a woman for like, you can know a woman like for a couple of months and then it's all over. But yet, you know, real men like yourself, Sandman, and so many other, like Aaron Clary, for example, you could have known them for years and still talk to them. But with women, you know, they come in, then they go out, and that's it. You never hear from them ever again, you know?
Yeah, not a lot of substance. You know, women are tend to be indulging and basking in their feelings, their emotions, and the pleasures of the moment. Modern women these days are far too hedonistic and pleasure-seeking and emotionally controlled to, generally speaking, develop much in the way of character or personality. Don't get me wrong, I've met some interesting women, but they were the exception to the rule, unfortunately.
Yeah, I think women get worse every day, especially if she's on the cuter side. Heck, I've even seen some ugly women who try to get, like, hot girl privileges. Those are the worst.
Yeah, well, they're women, that's, you know, that's enough these days to get your privilege card stamped, unfortunately.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, what you're doing, what I'm doing, getting our money right and getting the hell out of the West, I mean, I guess that would be like our lifelong goal, I guess, you know. I don't know. What do you think before we call today? I mean, what do you think about the future for young men out there who'd be like, hey, man, this is advice I can give you moving forward, you know?
Well, first of all, find something you're good at. Find something you're good at, because it's becoming less and less likely every year that you're going to be able to have a family, that you're going to be able to have kids, that you're going to be able to have a submissive wife, a traditional wife. And if you don't have those things to bring purpose and meaning to your life, then you got to have something. That is just a non-negotiable. If you don't have a family, if you don't have a wife and kids, you've got to have something else to fill that void. Now, traditionally, that has been what fills the void, but it's becoming ever less likely that you're going to be able to get that, because the circumstances surrounding getting that are so disadvantageous to you as a man that you'd have to be a freaking idiot to want it. So you've got to find something that you're good at, that will give you purpose, and that you can do for the rest of your life, be it to make a living or something that you focus on heavily when you're not doing the work that brings home the bacon. And even then, so there's just two prong point. Find something you're good at that allow you to make a living, and find something you love that you can do for the rest of your life. Now, maybe what you find that you love will also be the thing that allows you to bring home the bacon. If that's the case, great. But if it's not, then look at yourself realistically. Learn as much as you can about who you are, what makes you tick. Spend as much time as you can turning your perceptions inward to learn every little thing you can about yourself, what your skills are, what your passions are. Am I going to be able to turn those passions into some kind of career? Or is that unrealistic based upon the amount of ability that I am going to be able to attain? Do I have the skills? Do I have the talent to take my passion to a level where I'm going to be able to make a living? Or is that never going to happen? Is that unrealistic? So now I have to find something that I am skilled about something that I'm good at, that can make money, and then I can follow my passion on the side. But whatever you do, you have to develop those two things. You have to find what's going to be able to make you a living, something you're good at, good enough at to support you, and a passion. and make those your purpose. Otherwise, you're going to be directionless, you're going to be rudderless, and you're going to end up being suicidal and depressed and down in the dumps, and then you're going to get fat because you're going to get addicted to food because you're eating all the freaking time because you're so depressed and you're self-medicating, and you'll become a drunk, and it just goes downhill from there. So that's my advice to young men. And then once you do those things, plan your escape from the West. And plan on Eastern European countries, ideally, because they have experienced the kind of woke, collectivist, socialist, communist crapola that, ideologically speaking, economically speaking, culturally, governmentally, that we are now embracing in Europe and America, and they've rejected it. So you want to go to those countries if you can. Look at Hungary. Look at Poland. Look at Romania. Places that are red-pilled to these political ideologies because they've already lived through them and they know what a bad idea they are. And then move to one of those places.
Bulgaria is not bad. I've heard very good things about Bulgaria. I never heard Bulgaria, but I heard really good things about Bulgaria.
Yeah, any Eastern European country, because all those have already experienced the evils, the woes of communism, socialism, and they firmly rejected them. So that's my advice. Find purpose through your work or through your passions, or both if possible, and plan to get out. Especially if you're a white man, but if a man, period, because honestly, very soon it won't matter what color man you are, the fact that you're a man will be enough to brand you as an undesirable. And we already see it happening now. So that's my advice to young men.
Good, good. I am pretty sure when we release this, we're going to get a lot of people in the comment section, you know, pretty much telling us, yeah, you guys are saying what we've been thinking all along. You just made it concrete for us now. So,
well, I hope so. That's the only reason I make content. It's a passion for me, and it's a purpose for me. And if I even just reach one guy, if I even just reach one dude out there, and his life gets better, and he follows my advice, and he gets on a path of success, then my job is done.
Yep. Same thing with me, man. I don't care. I mean, I'm not making money off of any of this stuff. But like you said, if one person gets sick. You know, Terrence Pop saved, you know, about 550 people. So God knows how many you and I have, you know, saved on our own individual endeavors. So we're very.
I hope it's been a lot. If it's not been a lot, it's at least been a little. And that makes it worth it for me.
Yep. All right, realist philosopher, I'm going to let you go get some rest. I know this is probably the longest. Content-wise, after your ordeal, so want you to be safe and happy tonight. The crash wouldn't be too bad.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate your concern, and I enjoyed talking to you very much. All right, so that's it for my conversation with the founder of MGTOW.TV. If you liked and enjoyed that conversation and what we had to say, if you like the things I had to say specifically, please consider joining my Patreon for a value-for-value proposition. I'm going to be producing some of my best content and posting it there alone for people who subscribe to my Patreon. And for the more immediate future, if there's anybody out there that would like to donate to my GoFundMe, I would sure appreciate it. I'm in a rough time. I'm not too proud. I'm not ashamed to admit it. Things are real difficult. I can't do very much. But I am doing my best, and I'm doing as much as I possibly can. But realistically, it's going to take several months before I'm back up on my feet and can reliably bring home the bacon, as it were, or bring home any bacon at all. So I know the economy is hard, so please do not donate if you can't afford to. Only donate if you can. Any amount is greatly appreciated. Again, you'll find my GoFundMe down in the description, and also my Cash App ID if you want to donate directly. That way, again, totally, completely up to you. But if you can donate, I greatly appreciate your help. I could sure use it. I'm a little tired right now. That was a long, long discussion. Before the injury, wouldn't have been a big problem. Now, the energy drinks are starting to wear off. So I'm going to head out. Thanks for tuning in, and I wish you all a good and pleasant day. Take care.